Welcome, everyone. Welcome, siblings, for our first Sangha date of 2026. So lovely to be together. So take a moment to look at the faces of all the friends that you haven't seen since last year. This is our Sangha family, our spiritual family. These are the people who we rely on to support us when we're not feeling our strongest. And these are the people we offer support to when we're feeling confident and strong and joyful. So know that this energy is always with you, always supporting you, always caring for you. It's not possible to be alone. So this year, our theme, as you probably know, is Breathe, You Are Alive. So this is our fourth year of coming together quarterly on Zoom, amazingly enough. For the past 3 years, our study has focused on the Bodhisattva trainings, which is a specialty of the Mahayana path. This year, we're going to turn our focus to the essential practice of working with the breath. So our theme for this year is called Breathe, You Are Alive. Tonight, we're going to begin with some history of the two sutras we'll be working with this year. The Anapanasati, the full awareness of breathing, which is going to be our main text, supported by the Satipatthana Sutra, the four establishments or four foundations of mindfulness. You're going to be sent out a handout, an electronic handout after this talk or in the next day or two with this information. But just to let you know, it's not necessary to get these books, but if you want to get a book, this is the book. It's called Breathe, You Are Alive. It's the teaching and commentary by Thich Nhat Hanh on the Sutra on the Full Awareness of Breathing. And the book on the four establishments of mindfulness is called Transformation and Healing. They both probably have different covers at this point. These are ancient copies, editions. And then there's a book called Awakening of the Heart. And this is a book that has many sutras in it, and the first two sutras are the ones we're talking about tonight. So these are available at Parallax Press or other bookstores, booksellers. And Dorothy will be sending this out, this information out, so you don't have to know it now. So tonight we'll learn how this sutra, especially the sutra on the full awareness of breathing, impacted our teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh's, understanding and teaching. Then we'll explore how to approach studying a sutra, what qualities are needed in order to get the most from our investigation. Next, we'll dive into the first four of the 16 exercises of the full awareness of breathing, and each quarter we'll focus on a different set of four. The sections focus on the body, the feelings, the mind, and the objects of mind. Last, we'll discuss how best to practice through the next quarter of the and the year ahead. So buckle up. I hope you're open to taking this adventure with me, one which I'm sure will be filled with surprises and openings personally and collectively. So during our time together tonight, I'll be offering three different poems by Rosemary Wattola Traumer. As the forces of violence grow louder and create ever more suffering in our world, I find myself really needing to turn to what is true, what speaks my heart. I need daily reminders of how to be, of how best to engage and respond each day, and poetry often does this for me. So I'll read the first poem, which will lead us into a guided meditation and lead us into silence. Find your posture, relaxed and alert. steady, grounded, and still. And let the peace and safety that's present here envelop you. Lumbricus terrestris. On a day when the world is weighty, dark and dense with need, I want to be the earthworm that gives itself over to tunneling, its every movement an act of bringing spaciousness. And when minutes feel crushed by urgency, I want to meet the world worm-like, which is to say grounded, consistent, even slow. No matter how desperate the situation, the worm does not tunnel faster nor burrow more. It knows it can take decades to build fine soil. To whatever is compacted, the worm offers its good worm work, quietly bringing porosity to what is trodden, compressed. So often in my rush to repair, I end up exhausted. Let my gift to the world be my constancy, a devotion to openness, my willingness to be with what is. Let my gift to myself be patience as I tend what is dense and dark. With posture upright and stable, we sit at the foot of the Bodhi tree. Body, speech, and mind are one in stillness. There is no more thought of right and wrong. Mind and body dwell in perfect mindfulness. I realize my original nature, leaving the shore of illusion behind. Noble Sangha, diligently bring your mind into meditation. Namo Shakyamunaye Buddhaya. Breathing in, I know I am breathing in. Breathing out, I know I am breathing out. In, out. Breathing in, I follow my in-breath all the way. Breathing out, I follow my out-breath all the way. In, out. So take a few moments to take care of your body. If it wants some hydration, some stretching, let your body tell you how it wants to be moved. Does it want to reach for the stars? Does it want to walk on clouds like Nancy has us do? Does it want to go sideways? Does it want to hug? Does it want to shake? No, it's probably going to be happier settling for a while we listen. So as Thay Thap Hai writes in his book, The Eight Realizations of Great Beings, which most of us are reading at this moment, Vietnamese Buddhism is a combination of Zen, Theravadan, and Pure Land styles of practice. As I said earlier, we've been focusing on the Mahayana practice, training to be bodhisattvas. Very briefly, the Theravadan lineage is the earliest and is based on the original teachings of the Buddha. The Mahayana practice developed later as a response to the times and an understanding by the Buddha's students how to develop skillful means to help all beings be free of suffering and to find liberation. There is no bodhisattva practice in the Theravadan tradition, so we've been firmly in the Mahayana teachings for the past 3 years. Phapai notes what a gem Vietnamese Buddhism is, as we have roots in all three styles of Buddhism. By practicing and studying these sutras now, we begin to explore the foundation of Theravadan practice. When our teacher, Thay, entered the monastery as a novice monk at 16, he was not taught these sutras. They were not part of the practice. It wasn't until he found himself exiled in Paris in the 1970s that Thay came upon the sutra on the full awareness of breathing. The story goes like this, as taught in a recent course I took online from Deer Park Monastery called Who is Thich Nhat Hanh? This is a marvelous course which is offered each autumn from Deer Park, and I highly recommend it. So Thay was living in Paris at this time, and I'm quoting here from the summary of one of the weeks of the teaching. During the early 70s, Thay received notable support from prominent intellectuals, including the esteemed French professor Paul Demaville, a renowned Buddhist scholar, who proposed Thay teach Vietnamese Buddhist history at the École Pratique des Hautes Études. Thay accepted the teaching offer, which gave him access to invaluable Buddhist resources at the Bibliothèque Nationale de France, including Vietnamese journals and microfilms of ancient texts, which Thay utilized to deepen his understanding of Buddhist history and practice. Integrating methods from philology and archaeology, he explored the origins and evolutions of sutras, distinguishing foundational Buddhist teachings from later developments. This research enriched Thay's grasp of essential doctrines such as the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, and reinforced the alignment of his practice with scholarly insights. Over time, these studies brought clarity and consistency to his understanding of Buddhism, bridging ancient teachings with contemporary approaches to mindfulness and science. In his studies, Thay focused on the preface to the Sutra on the Mindfulness of Breathing, authored by Master Tang Hoi, which led him to discover the Anapanasati Sutta in the Pali Canon. This sutra, which details 16 exercises of mindful breathing encapsulating core Buddhist teachings, was slightly different from its counterpart in the Chinese canon. Tai identified three related differences, enabling him to correct a transmission error in the Pali text. Tai documented his findings and insights in works such as Breathe, You Are Alive, by bringing clarity and depth to the understanding of Buddhist mindfulness practice. Discovering these sutras brought immense joy to Tai, laying the foundation for his contributions to modern meditation and mindfulness. There were several times when I heard Tai teaching, and he said that when he found the sutra on the full awareness of breathing, he was the happiest person in the world. So it had a great impact on him. Now I want to step back for a couple of minutes and talk about how to best learn from a sutra. A sutra is the teaching of the Buddha. For me, studying a sutra takes a certain attitude of mind. For me, it's like reading poetry. The teaching in it is dense, and the more you study, the more layers of understanding can reveal themselves. So I find it helpful to look at ourselves as an investigative team. We might be a group of research scientists, or a team of detectives looking for clues, or a group of investigative reporters. We are researching the mystery of our bodies and minds, and in this way we begin to see and understand the workings of our world. We look for motives, for opportunity, for the physical and mental environment, and for clues. We can also see ourselves as gardeners, analyzing the soil which grows the flowers and weeds as a consequence of our thinking. Whichever metaphor attracts you, put on that hat right now and invite in the attitude and the tools that will help you. There are certain tools of the mind that will enable us to approach the deep teachings revealed in these sutras. The first tool is curiosity. When I contemplate the meaning of curiosity, what comes to me first is openness. Becoming curious about something requires you to drop your context for things temporarily, to let go of any preconceived notions, biases, and views you hold, and to look with new eyes. It also requires you to let go of what else might be pulling your attention, and just to focus on the object of your curiosity. So it helps develop your ability to concentrate without effort. It also implies a friendliness to that object of your curiosity. And we know that when we have a friendly attitude, we're more likely to be able to communicate successfully with something. Curiosity can also conquer fear. I think of Ishi, the last of the Yahi Indians in Oroville, California, who spent his last 5 years in the white man's world. At one point, Ishi saw a train for the very first time, and he climbed on it. Later, a reporter asked Ishi how he could possibly take that courageous step, and Ishi replied that his curiosity was greater than his fear. Curiosity has great openness and great power to move in the direction of goodness. The second tool we need to cultivate is an ability to suspend judgment. This can also be seen as part of the process of being curious. If we're carrying judgment about something, it's very hard to see anything new, as judgment itself implies an assumption that we know something, and therefore limitation. Certainly, we use wise discernment in our examination, but we need to be aware of our biases, and temporarily at least, to let go of our judgment. This is so powerful to me, because many times I've been in a group discussion where I have asked each person to share their major obstacle to practice and to happiness. Each time, The number one culprit has been that has been called out is judgment, either self-judgment, judgment of others, or usually both. To investigate successfully, we need to drop our prejudices. The third tool, which is embedded in the other two, is called beginner's mind. This term reflects an ability to let go of all our prior practice experience and to come to each moment fresh and new. My Hawaiian shaman teacher used to say, "Don't think you know someone if you haven't seen them in 3 days." The Buddha would probably say more like 3 breaths. There's one more extremely important tool that we need to understand and develop when we practice according to the sutra. It is simply that we include everything as the object of our practice. Whatever comes up for us, be it resistance, be it joy, from the spectrum of happiness to suffering, we include it all as part of our practice. Whatever comes up becomes the object of our meditation. This is how many of us are trained to practice mindfulness already. Tai has spoken of this practice when he said, "As a practitioner, you have a right to suffer. You don't have a right not to practice." He's saying that whatever the cause of your suffering, that becomes the object of your practice. And this is so marvelous because it's like a magical formula for getting a grip. When we become aware of our suffering, it can no longer consume us. It may feel like a part of us, maybe a big part, but it's not all of us. So we have a place to start, and much of its power over us is taken away simply by becoming aware of it and starting to hold it with our mindfulness. So we bring the qualities of curiosity and openness, friendliness and inclusiveness to our investigation. We practice letting go of ideas and judgments and find freedom in being fully present to what is. Before we turn directly to the sutra on the full awareness of breathing, we need to understand that this sutra leads directly into the second one called the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, also referred to as the Four Establishments, the Four Fields, or the Four Grounds. What's important in all these names is that we understand that the Four Establishments are processes. They're not objects. They're taking us on a journey through an ever-changing field. There's a phrase that's repeated in every section of the sutra on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. The body in the body, the feelings in the feelings, the mind in the mind, and the objects of mind in the objects of mind. So what does this mean, the body in the body? Here's how it's explained in the sutra. What does observing the body in the body mean? This is how a practitioner observes the body in the body. He observes the inside of the body, or the outside of the body, or both the inside and the outside of the body. He observes the process of coming to be in the body, or the process of dissolution in the body, or both the process of coming to be and the process of dissolution. Or he is mindful of the fact there is a body here, until understanding and full awareness come about. He maintains the observation free, not caught up in any worldly consideration. That is how to practice observation of the body in the body, O bhikkhus. So we may or may not be aware of the terms proprioception and interoception. Even if we've never heard them, we have a clue with the last part of the words, conception, which leads us to perception. So proprioception is our awareness, our perception of our bodies in space, what is around us and how we are placed and move through these objects. You may have had a time when you find yourself bumping into things, Your proprioception is compromised and you can't navigate fully. An example of practicing outside the body is to take everything in the room as part of our body. So when we're meditating and we hear a noise, normally we might consider it a disturbance to our concentration. But if it is part of us, we can accept it more easily. We can also see the words and movements of others as part of us, watching someone stand and walk in mindfulness as our standing and walking. This can give us great benefit in developing our mindfulness and our sense of non-self. We can do this also by practicing with the elements, for example, first focusing on our breath inside our bodies, and then focusing on the air, the gentle wind moving around us, and then focus on the awareness that the wind outside us and the air within us is the same. There really is no inside and no outside. We walk around acting as if we believe that composite things are solid and permanent. Since everything is composite, made of a variety of elements, when we look carefully, we see that we're all impermanent and lack a separate self. So our practice is to dismantle this notion of self, to see our true selves as existing in both form and formlessness. We use the method of deep, careful investigation of the form to lead us to this insight. As we practice, we unpeel layer after layer of this false understanding and get to a deeper experience of interbeing. The teacher Alan Wallace says, "We live under a powerful illusion that things, including us, are real. Only by looking carefully with a clear instrument, our mind, can we challenge this view." And the other part of it is interoception. And interoception is the awareness of what's going on inside your body. Being able to listen to and understand what your body's telling you. For example, you're hungry, thirsty, or you have to urinate. Many people have a hard time acknowledging these not so subtle messages from their bodies. And there's so much more about our body can tell us. We can learn to listen to our heart rate, to the level of constriction or relaxation of our organs, to the dryness of our skin. Where is there tension? Where is there subtle discomfort? When I tune into my body, I can usually find a subtle sense of discomfort in my belly. I don't know why, but I suspect it's a subtle expression of fear I carry. I try to offer my kind attention to it frequently. When we practice these first four exercises of the body in the body, this is interoception, becoming aware of the inner functions of the body. It says the body in the body to express that this is not thinking about what's going on in our body, but truly investigating, using the tool of our attention. We learn to become friends with our body from the inside out. You may already do this practice, but for some of us, this may be a new level of becoming intimate with ourselves. What is closer to us than the functions of our body? And yet we pay so little attention to them unless they are troubling us. So instead of thinking about breathing, we use our attention to directly follow our breathing all the way into our body and all the way out of our body. In this way, we truly become our body. Our teacher Tai explains it this way. While we are fully aware of and observing deeply an object, the boundary between the subject who observes and the object being observed gradually dissolves, and the subject and object become one. This is the essence of meditation. Only when we penetrate an object and become one with it can we understand. It is not enough to stand outside and observe an object. That is why the sutra reminds us to be aware of the body in the body. Tai goes on, this is how the practitioner is aware of body as body, both inside the body and outside the body, and establishes mindfulness in the body with understanding, insight, clarity, and realization. This is called being aware of body as body. This means the practitioner recognizes, sees, sheds light on, and realizes the impermanent and interdependent nature of the body and all that is by means of mindful observation of the body. From this explanation from Tai, you can get hints of how this simple practice has the capacity to lead us to great understanding, which can heal and transform our lives. As we investigate these instructions from the Buddha, we continually come back with our open, non-judgmental curiosity to the sensations in our body. Using the tool of the breath, we inquire on more and more subtle levels. What is the action, the sensation, and the motivation of each experience? Let's take a breath and listen to the bell. The first three exercises are based on awareness, noting what's going on with our breathing, getting to know this most intimate, loyal friend. Is there anyone or anything more loyal, more intimate than your breath? It is with you from the first moment you manifest to the last. It is closer to you than anyone else. Most treasured friend. So I'll describe the first four exercises now, the ones we'll be working with this quarter. So this is the body and the body practice, and then we'll end with the practice period. Even when just listening, it's helpful to start by settling into your meditation posture. This helps train your body to guide you with ease into meditation. So find your posture, find your breath, and follow it all the way in and out. The first two exercises are to become aware of the length of your breath. I'm just going to read the exercises. Breathing in, the first one is breathing in a long breath. I know I am breathing in a long breath. Breathing out a long breath. I know I am breathing out a long breath. The second exercise is breathing in a short breath. I know I am breathing in a short breath. Breathing out a short breath. I know I am breathing out a short breath. The third exercise directs us to expand our awareness to our whole body. Three, breathing in, I am aware of my whole body. Breathing out, I am aware of my whole body. This may be a challenge for some of us, but with practice, we'll be able to include our whole body in the realm of our attention. Using and developing your imagination can be a helpful tool to accomplishing this. Then with the fourth exercise, we move from awareness to action. The sutra is teaching us that we have agency, that we have choice in how our bodies and minds manifest in each moment. We begin with training to be aware of the nature of our breathing and then expand it to include our whole body. we begin to realize just how practical this teaching is, how valuable a tool it can be in moments of anxiety, stress, and fear. The fourth exercise is, breathing in, I calm my whole body. Breathing out, I calm my whole body. Many of us are familiar with the recently popular information on the set of vagal nerves in our body, the largest nerve system that runs down both sides of our body from our neck to our gut. This set of nerves activates the parasympathetic nervous system, which sends the messages that we are safe, that we are well. There are many ways to consciously activate the vagus nerve. Recently, as the mainstream medical community has become aware of it, I've read articles about devices you can buy that activate the vagus nerve. I had to laugh because we already know that just through gentle movement, massage, and breathing, we can do this. We don't need any devices. The easiest way is to gently encourage your out-breath to be longer than your in-breath. I had an experience of using this technique in a medical setting recently. In November, I had surgery to repair a hiatal hernia, after which the anesthesia caused parts of my body to shut down. So a week after the surgery, I had to go to the ER for a small procedure. Everything was simple and smooth, but I was about to leave. The nurse said, "Oh, you can't leave. Your heart rate is too high." So after having just gotten out of one hospital, I began to feel like I might be trapped in another one, which of course made my anxiety worse. She told me to lie back, and then she dimmed the lights and left the room. So I had been practicing this technique of bringing safety and well-being to my body by activating my vagus nerve, and I realized I might as well test it out. So I became aware of my breathing and extending my exhale. At the end of the exhale, I like to just rest in what I imagine is a still pool in my dantian, my belly. So in less than 3 minutes, the nurse returned and she said, "You did it. Your heart rate went down 20 points. So this is a very practical teaching. Please remember to practice this, especially when your body or mind is in a state of stress. So now we're going to practice with the first four exercises, and I hope you continue to practice with them, preferably every day during the next 3 months. Three bells, please. We start with the preliminary. Breathing in, I know I am breathing in. Breathing out, I know I am breathing out. In, out. exercise number one, breathing in a long breath. I know I am breathing in a long breath. Breathing out a long breath. I know I am breathing out a long breath. Exercise two, breathing in a short breath. I know I am breathing in a short breath. Breathing out a short breath. I know I am breathing out a short breath. Exercise three, breathing in, I am aware of my whole body. Breathing out, I am aware of my whole body. Exercise 4. Breathing in, I calm my whole body. Breathing out, I calm my whole body. So this is our practice for the next quarter. Coming home to our bodies through close friendship with our breath. Through awareness, we're able to step into action, calming our bodies. Can we understand how valuable this ability is, to be able to calm our bodies with our breath? Let's explore this together over the next 3 months. And a note on starting this practice if you haven't done it before. Sometimes when you focus your attention on your breath, it's hard to do without your breathing changing. Our instruction is to let our breath be how it is, not to try to change it in any way. But I found when I started this practice, and even now sometimes, that my attention changes my breathing. It's a skill to be able to focus on our breath without it changing. So if this happens to you, this can become the object of your practice. Bring your open-hearted curiosity to it, and eventually your breath may become comfortable showing up without needing to change. And because many of us have had difficult relationships with parts of our bodies through our lives, maybe we've not accepted parts of us when we were younger and trying to fit into a standard, constricted form of beauty fed us by society. Or maybe we've had illness, or parts of our body have difficulty functioning fully. Whatever challenging relationships we've had with our bodies, we can gently release them as we turn our attention to this moment and the almost incredulous sense that here we are, as we are, together, able to breathe and able to show up for life. So here's the second poem by Rosemary Traumer, a poem of healing for any difficult feelings we may have held or are holding about our bodies. It's called Letter to the Parts of Me I Have Tried to Exile. I'm sorry. I thought banishing you was the way to become better, more perfect, more good, more free. The irony, I thought if I cut you off and cast you out, if I built the walls high enough, then the parts left would be more whole. As if the sweet orange doesn't need the toughened rind, the bitter seed. As if the forest doesn't need the blue fury of fire. It didn't work, did it, the exile? You were always here, jangling the hinges, banging at the door, whispering through the cracks. Left to myself, I wouldn't have known to take down the walls, nor would I have had the strength to do so. That act was grace disguised as disaster. But now that the walls are rubble, it is also grace that teaches me to want to embrace you. Grace that guides me to be gentle, even with the part of me that would still try to exile any other part. It is grace that invites me to name all parts beloved. How honest it all is, how human. I promise to keep learning how to know you as my own, to practice opening to what at first feels unwanted, meet it with understanding, trust all belongs, welcome you home. So I'd like to end with a few comments on the monks walking for peace from Texas to Washington, D.C. They've been a topic of discussion at peaceful refuge gatherings recently, and I think probably most of us are aware of them to some extent. So these monks are Vietnamese, and they practice in the Theravadan tradition, which means as we embark on our year with the sutra, we are practicing the way they do, which I think is a wonderful synchronicity. Those of us who have followed their walking meditation journey so far know that they've faced extraordinary challenges. One monk was hit by a car and lost his leg, and consequently two of the remaining monks have given up the position of lying down practice, so they rest by sitting through the night. They've been acknowledged and honored along the way, but also reviled and verbally abused. And still they walk, not only for peace, but in peace. I want to remind us all that we are fortunate beyond measure to have a teacher, Thay, who lived in the midst of war and extraordinary suffering and taught us how to respond in these chaotic times. As his country raged in war all around him, he found every creative means to call for an end to the war. He traveled to the United States and to Europe and to Asia, advocating for an end to the war. He led walking meditation with thousands in the streets of major cities around the world, calling for peace. So when suffering is raging, walking meditation is a response already in our spiritual DNA. No wonder these monks speak to us. They are us. What's important for us to understand when we're feeling helpless in the face of the escalating suffering in the world is that they are not doing this alone. We have to let go of the illusion of separation. We have to understand that our practice, every conscious breath, every moment we truly show up, is fueling their action. They are us. We are them. Where do you think their ability to stay calm, focused, and loving comes from? Not from themselves as individuals, but from every person generating peace. They are an expression of all the good hearts turning the tide from violence to love. We are all the fuel for their actions. As our teacher lives on in us as his continuation, we live in the steps of those monks. I'll say it again. They are not separate from us. They are us, and we are them. And every person who greets them, who follows them online, who connects with them, and whose heart is opened through this energy of peace, helps to keep love alive in these dark times. This is our true work right now, and we cannot be distracted for a moment by doubt or forgetting who we are. Someone who was touched by their journey made this comment, "Where there is darkness, there is also light, always. And we get to choose what we entertain, what we amplify, what we allow to shape our inner world." Sometimes peace doesn't arrive with answers. Sometimes it just walks past us and asks us to remember who we are. The leading monk of the walk, Bhikkhu Panikkara, said, "We walk not to protest, but to awaken the peace that already lives within each one of us." The walk for peace is simple, a simple yet meaningful reminder that unity and kindness begin within each of us and can radiate outward to families, communities, and society as a whole. The walk for peace continues as a living reminder that unity cannot be forced or rushed. It must be practiced patiently, step by step. This journey does not promise instant change. It offers something more enduring, a calm invitation to slow down, to look inward, and to remember that peace is not an idea waiting to be debated. It is a practice already walking among us. We cannot afford to spend a moment in doubt. We hold our fear in our two hands and gently embrace it with kindness. We breathe in calm, joy, and love, and we offer our smile to our world. Each step we take in mindfulness, we are walking with the monks. We are saying yes to beauty and truth. We affirm the reality of love as our foundation. Each conscious breath brings us closer to the reality of the preciousness of our life here together in our truly beloved community. Psychologist Francis Weller said, "When we get quiet, we can be informed by something larger than us, larger than our stories, larger than our wounds, larger than our conditioned fictions. We are vulnerable. We are receptor sites for the larger dreaming of the planet." And here's one last poem by Rosemary Traumer called "A Wild Becoming." "And then came the day I discovered a sky full of birds inside and around me, all of them singing love, love, love. Around my shoulders appeared a cloak of stars going supernova. In my womb swirled a chorus of waves. How could I not have known I was growing a crown of antlers? How could I have missed my whole life has been preparing me to transform who I am for love? Now all I want is to open enough to let love do with me what it will. I want to be in service to the radiance that even now begins to shine through. I want to lose what I thought I knew of my story. And though fear is also here, I want to surrender to the strange and insistent voice of love saying, 'These are the gifts you've been given. Now, sweetheart, now be the change.'" So have a little stretch before our announcements. So the first announcement is there'll be an in-person Day of Mindfulness in Ashland on Saturday, June 13th. And if anyone is interested in receiving the 5 mindfulness trainings in a formal ceremony, or wants to understand what this means, you can contact any of the Peaceful Refuge board members, Robert, Nancy, Dorothy, Dennis, Sandy, Jane, and of course, Tim and Jan for the Tiger Mountain folks. And we would love to have the Tiger Mountain folks come be with us. And now for the homework. So the first homework assignment is love your body. Get to know your body as your most beloved, intimate friend. Breathe inside you. Be curious, without judgment, open and kind. Number 2, take your body for a walk. Notice the movement of your body, all the miracles that your wonderful body can perform. Number 3, sit every day, if you can, for at least 5 minutes, practicing these 4 exercises. Try sitting at the beginning of the day and then again at the end. Number 4, keep a journal and make a few notes every day. Track the path of this practice. It can just be a few short things, but it will be probably a very valuable resource for you. And the number 5 is we are renewing and rejuvenating our buddy program. Francis Weller says that the medicine we need most right now is friendship and imagination. So we are going to, many of you have participated in our buddy system, and was we started it, a couple years ago. And so we're starting it up again, and some people are very attached to their buddy, which is a wonderful thing. Developed a deep spiritual friendship, and you can keep that buddy. But also we encourage you to be open to a new buddy, either instead of or in addition to your first buddy. So it's a great way to expand our and deepen our friendships throughout the sanghas. So as we know, we get together with our buddies, you figure out what works for you once you have a buddy. Once or twice a month, get together, and depends on geography whether you can do it in person or online or by phone. Your time together should be, it's really important to have a buddy, I think, for this practice, because this is a very, practical, practice-oriented type of teaching that we're doing. And so to really share with someone one-on-one how you're doing, what you relate to, what confuses you, what joys you have, what confusion you have, all of it, I think would be really helpful. So if you want to have a specific buddy, that's fine. You can just let us know that. But otherwise, you can just say, I want a buddy, and kind of let the person who's leading this choose your buddy for you. And that person is Nancy Lynn. And that's her right there. She did a great job getting us buddies last time, so I know she'll do a great job this time. And if you want a buddy, you just contact Nancy. And again, it'll be in the handout that Dorothy sends out after the program, but just to, if you want to take it down, her email is N as in Nancy, Lynn, L-Y-N-N, 48@gmail.com. So if you want a buddy, contact Nancy, and I'm just going to say, try to do it in the next week so she can start assigning. She'll wait to get a week full of all the people that want buddies, and then she'll start assigning them. So, are there any other announcements tonight? Well,
Tim
dear
Bunyan.
friend, yeah.
I'd like to announce it was a wonderful Dharma talk. Thank you so much, Barbara. and just remind the Tiger Mountain folks that after a short break, we'll reconvene at our regular Zoom link to share what some of the things that might be bubbling. And Peaceful Refuge folks, if you're interested in enjoying some time, let us know, and we have one link we use. Anyway, we'll be joining together, and I'll help facilitate the Buddy program. If you didn't catch the email address, we'll make sure that all gets taken care of. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. All right, folks. Well, just let's just take a breath and let this time together soak into the cells of our bodies. So this can be a resource for us over the next times of challenges and chaos and whatever might come our way. Doesn't seem like it's slowing down, so.
I have a musical tune in mind, and it is, Happy Days Are Here Again. Look forward to being together with you all next time.
Thank you, Robert. Okay, now that we've gotten our chanting going, let's offer our practice. May the merits of this practice benefit all beings and bring peace.